Okay, ladies, let's begin. We're continuing our study of Bishul Akum, the Gemara on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. So the Gemara tells us that in the case of Bishul Akum, if the Goy... Right? The Gemara says that I would have thought that the Goy's intention was to cook the Keli. Kamashal, and the Goy's intention is to harden the Keli. And we pointed out that this Gemara seems to contradict the Gemara in Shabbos that says that the intention is actually to cook the Keli. So last time we learned, we focused on Rashi's approach to answer this contradiction. Who wants to fill me in what Rashi said?
There was no Bishul by Kalim.
And if that's the case, so by Shabbos also we should say that there's no Bishul by Kalim. How come it's a problem by Shabbos? Because,
yeah.
You speak louder?
Oh yeah, because with Bishul, with Shabbos there's like avos and toldos. So there would be the tolda of like not of cooking with the Kalim, but... By
Bishul Akum, so the halacha is that only avos are chayiv, not toldos, and therefore cooking a keli, which would be a tolda, can't be chayiv by Bishul Akum. That seems to be the way we understood this Gemara according to Rashi. Now, the Bali HaTosfos, however, say some expression that it's mivashel ktsas, and that Bishul Garua you're also intending for. Right, that's the way Tosis writes it over here. V'gamla also Bishul Garua humiskavein v'gabe Shabbos hechmiru lahachshivo, but not by Bishul Akum. Now, to explain the Tosfos, we noted that the Ran on Daf Tesvav uses pretty much the same lashon as Tosis, but the Ran effectively said that when you throw a stick into the fire, what you're really doing is you are intending to harden the stick, but there's a psik resha that there is going to be some cooking that's going on. And psik resha is going to be chayiv on Shabbos, but psik resha is not going to be chayiv by Bishul Akum. That's what emerges from the way the Ran formulates it. If you want to see the Ran on... Tesvav Amar Aleph, there's a big deep Ramas called Kol HaChagovim. So the Ran writes, Afal pi she'enu miskavim l'bishol chayiv, demod Reb Shimon b'psik reisha v'lo yomos. Right? Meaning that the reason why you're chayiv on Shabbos is because it's a psik reisha. Now, the Ran does not do the full job of explaining how come psik reisha is not chayiv by Bishul Akum. So what we presented last time were two approaches to explain this idea. Does anyone want to fill me in on what these two approaches were? Ms. Schwartz, is that a hand up or?
I think one of the approaches is that by Shabbos we have Sigrisha for Doraisa, but by
So one approach is that psik resha is a concept that's only formulated by the Oraisos, and because Bishul Akum is Dirabonon, the category of psik resha does not apply. Right? That's already fancy lumdis. Now, just to expand on that concept, the Magen Avraham in Orach Chaim Siman Shin Yudalet Sifkatan Hey quotes from the Trumas Hadeshen that psik resha does not apply to derabbanans. In other words, psik resha is only going to be chayiv by deraisas, not by derabbanans. And the Magen Avraham, as the expression goes, jumps up and down and spits wood and nickels and says, we don't know what you're talking about. You should know, apparently I've been saying this expression for a while, because a guy who was in my shir like 4 years ago sent me an email this week and says, Rebbe, I seem to remember that you jumped up and down and spit wood and nickels about something. I'm like, what? How long ago I've been using this expression, but apparently I've been using it for a while. So there you have it. But the Trumas Hadeshen assumes that psik resha is only chayiv on d'oraisas, not on d'rabbanans, and the Magen Avraham disagrees, shin yudal sif katan hey, and says that psik resha is also going to be chayiv on d'rabbanans. Now, in Lomdus, There are two approaches to psik resha, why it should be chayiv. Two approaches to psik resha. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman speaks about this in the Kobet Shiurim on Ksubis, letter Yud Ches. Rabbi Chanan says that one approach to psik resha being chayiv is what we call the approach of chada maisa. Meaning, usually a darbashena maskava means I do action A, and because I did action A, so action B may or may not occur. That's darbashena maskavin, right? I drag a bench, and I may or may not end up digging a hole. That's darbashena maskavin. If dragging the bench inevitably digs a hole, that's a psik resha. And one approach to saying why psik resha is going to be chayiv is because I can't view it like it's two separate actions. I can't say that all I did was I dragged the bench. Hello? Now, you didn't just drag a bench, you dug a hole. Since dragging a bench inevitably digs a hole, you can't argue that what you did was just dragging a bench and you should not be chayiv. You actually dug a hole. That's the chadamaisa approach. These actions cannot be separated. Right, make sense? For example, like the halacha is that a nazir is not allowed to cut his or her hair, correct? Actually, Rav Shechter always asks this question to get into the kolel. Right? If you want to get into the kolel NYU, can the woman be a nazir?
Yes.
It's a pasuk, right? Isha isha ki yafli lindar neder nazir. Right? One year we actually tried to do this in the Purim spiel in yeshiva, that we had a discussion about if a woman's a nazir, what happens to the beard? Isn't it supposed to be long? It's like a very stupid Purim spiel. But it's totally not funny. But Rav Shechter pointed out that the Gemara Nazir says that a Nazir can only not cut his or her hair, but as in head hair. But the beard, you are allowed to cut if you're a Nazir, no? You never thought about that, did you? So you have to think about everything. It's very important. So a Nazir is not allowed to cut his or her hair. Is a Nazir allowed to comb the hair?
I might pull some out.
What?
I might pull some of their hair out.
You might pull the hair out. So nazir chofef umepaspes avo enosorek. No, a nazir is allowed to put the fingers through the hair, but you can't use a comb, because when you use a comb, right? So there's a machlekes Rashi and Tosis, but the simpler way of understanding that Gemara is using a comb will be a psik resha, and it will rip the hairs out. No. So psik resha means I can't say I'm just combing my hair and I'm not ripping hairs out, because hello, everybody knows that when you comb your hair, you're ripping it out, and therefore the mice of combing is a mice of ripping. Alternatively, Rabbi Chanan explains that the lumdus of psik resha is that we assume that you have kavana for the other action. No, usually something's a davar she'eino miskaven. I do action A, action B may or may not happen, davar she'eino miskaven. If it's a psik resha, so I don't have a right to say I had no kavana for action B. Because since action B automatically happens, it's ki'ilu I had kavana for action B. No? There's a big difference between these two approaches. Approach one is saying that combing my hair is ripping hairs out. Approach B is saying that combing my hair is having kavana for ripping the hairs out. That's Rabbi Chanan's two formulations of psik resha. And the nafka mina, of course, Rabbi Chanan points out, is Tosis at the beginning of Ksubis speaks about a psik resha delo nichalei. No? Let's say I am unhappy with the result. For example, I don't have as much hair left as I used to. And psik resha delo nichalei. I am not happy that the hairs get taken out. So am I still going to be chayiv in that case? Well, if you assume that the pshat is that the act of combing is an act of pulling hair out, of course you're chayiv. However, if you assume that psik resha just means that you don't have the out of saying I didn't have kavana, But in this case, I really could say I didn't have kavana because I really don't want the hair to come out. No? Are you confused?
I'm not confused. I just don't think it carries. Meaning, like, maybe I'm confused. It's a psik resha.
You're confused if you're confused.
Yes. Psik resha, I don't understand how you could say that just because, like, lo nicha, like, the whole point is that, like, the whole point of the lumdus of way number two is that you have kavana. Even
so the assumption
kavana,
is
and
that
if you don't want to have kavana, you had kavana.
Whoa, 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 whoa! No, that we're assuming that you had kavana. Don't tell me that your only kavana is to drag the bench. The only kavana is to comb the hair. No kavana to pull out the hair because we know better than you. We are saying, hey, you really had kavana.
But kavana to want it or kavana to know that it's going to happen, regardless of what you do.
So. The Aruch, who assumes that Psikresha, the Lo Nichola, is going to be Mutter, the Rebbe Chanan explains the Aruch, that what the Aruch means is that since you don't want the hair to come out, so Akarchecha, you don't have Kavana for the hair to come out. You don't want your hair to come out. Right? You don't want the hole to be dug.
So what's
going
to happen?
It's going to happen, but I don't want it. So you can't tell me, what do you mean? You're telling me that I had Kavana? I didn't have Kavana for it.
You knew it was
going to
happen, so it's
meaning.
Really,
meaning.
So, in other words, well, really, what we're doing over here, and this is I guess what you're all pointing out the same type of thing. There's a bit of a weakness in Rabbi Chanan's Svara, because Rabbi Chanan is speaking about kavana. I don't want the result. I don't want the hair to come out. I know it's going to happen. So says Rabbi Chanan, I can argue that I didn't have. I could still argue that I didn't have kavana for the hair to come out, because I'd prefer that the hair wouldn't come out. Even though it's inevitable that the hair will come out, but that doesn't automatically mean that I had kavana for the hair to come out.
But I think it's like...
If it's chadamaisa, so then you can't separate the act of combing from the act of ripping hair out.
I think in his havamina of the presentation, he's saying that it's almost like it's not so different from Chodamaisa. He's saying that, like, by the fact, like, because it's happening, you're having Kavana that it's going to happen. Because of Sigrisha, it must be that you're having Kavana. We're both for us.
Right, so that's not necessarily correct. In other words, if it's Lo Nichole, even though the result is inevitable, but you can't tell me I had Kavana for it. Because since I don't want it, that's not my Kavana.
So we're just changing it from the original thing. We're saying that psikresha means that you want, even though the basic understanding of psikresha is that the indirect thing is happening, we're saying that all of a sudden now psikresha means that we want the indirect thing in addition to the direct object that's being affected.
I'm not sure I understood you.
Meaning, like, psikresha is just saying that, right, like, there's an indirect malacha that's going to happen by the direct action that you're doing, right?
I do action A, action B will happen.
Will inevitably happen. So all of a sudden, what he's just defining psikresha as now is that when you do action A,
you want
action
B.
That's a very unique way to interpret
it. Correct. And that's the way Rabbi Chanan is trying to explain the Aruch. The Aruch who assumes that psikresha de lo nichole is not chayiv, the Aruch is obviously saying that psikresha means you have kavana for action B, also, but in a case when you don't want it, so then we could say, who says I had kavana for it? I didn't want it. You don't seem satisfied. Huh? The Chodamaisa way is more elegant. It's more simple, but it is a little bit difficult in the sense of combing hair is really an act of pulling hair out? Come on! This combing and this pulling. Dragging a bench is really making a hole? Right? I mean, it's...
Yeah,
maybe!
It's into the action.
Like, it's kind of like you're okay with, like, the damage once you decide to do it.
You're okay with?
Like, you're okay with, like, the negative, like, the side effects of the action. You're willing to do it.
In the case, in the Chodamaisa approach? In the Chodamaisa approach, it doesn't matter if I'm okay with it or not. It's because these things are linked. And they're always linked, so there's no way of unlinking them. Michal's been very, very patient.
So I'm just deciding if... Just because, like, I don't know, maybe I'm killing the lumdus, but, like, in the second point, don't we reject the Aruch anyway, Lemaisa?
So Lemaisa, the Aruch, you know, Shulchan Aruch quotes the Aruch. It's not like it's completely rejected. It quotes it and says, don't rely on it. Now, that gives the poskim certain leeway. There is a famous letter that Reb Simcha Zelig, the Dayan of Brisk, wrote to the journal HaPardes in the 1930s, where he was make on opening refrigerators based on the fact that he says, I have a tradition that we pass in like the Aruch, that Psik Reisha Delo Nichle is okay. You see, when you open a refrigerator, what happens is warm air rushes in, no? And that makes the motor work harder, correct?
Yeah.
Isn't that what happens? Now, do you want the warm air to go into the refrigerator? Presumably not, because it's a refrigerator. You want it cold, right? That's why you have it. So Reb Simcha Zelig famously argued in the HaPardes Journal that maybe he felt that Reb Chaim says this. There's an essay that Reb Chaim has in the first paragraph of Hilchos Shabbos, and his sefer to argue that the Rambam holds that Psik Reisha, the Lo Nichle is going to be permitted, like the Aruch. What?
Doesn't he only say it in like Mappas Morsa and in?
So Reb Chaim understands that the Rambam Shita in general was that Psik Reisha, the Lo Nichle is permitted, like the Aruch says. Right? That's the Chiddush that of Reb Chaim that Reb Simcha Zelig built upon to say that therefore opening refrigerators is permitted. Okay, but we're going a little too far afield. Now, how is this relevant for us? For Psik Reisha Anad Rabbanon? So, the general ruling yeshivos is that you try to stick every Psik Reisha conversation into this Chakira of Rebbe Chanan. Okay? So what we're going to try to do is somehow, using creativity, stick the question of whether Psik Reisha Anad Rabbanon is mutter or not, which we now know is a machlokas, Trumas Hadesh and Amagin Avram. And we're going to try to stick it into, right, and we're assuming that by Bishul Akum it's Drabbanon, so Psik Reisha is going to be okay. So we're going to stick it into this Chakira, but it's based on another premise that we have to develop. The premise is that the reason why Dinim, what's wrong if I violated Drabbanon? This is like a very bad question to ask, but who cares? Lo Susser, right? God says, listen to the rabbis, right? That's Lo Susser. Now, effectively, what that really means is that the Isser I violate when I don't listen to the Dinim Derabbanon is that I'm rebelling against the rabbis. No?
Not necessarily, but possibly.
It's certainly a strong possibility. That in Isser Derabbanon, I could say it like this, an Isser Derabbanon of Shabbos is not different than an Isser Derabbanon of Yom Kippur, which is not different than an Isser Derabbanon of Chazar, were there to be such a thing. All Isserim Derabbanon are also for the same reason. You're not listening to the Chachmei Hadar. Is that reasonable? So the nature of violating an Isser Derabbanon is that you are rebelling against the rabbis. Sounds good? Im kainim hadavarim, if this is correct, so then we could say as follows. What does it mean that you're rebelling against the rabbis? The Nesivus has a famous essay where the Nesivus writes that he says that to violate an Isser Derabbanon b'shogeg is not a problem. Usually if I do an Avera b'shogeg, I'm a bad person, no? Like we say in Yom Kippur, Al Chet Shechotanu Lefanecha, right? Ba'ones, Ratzon, Shogeg, right? It's also an Aveira, it's an Aveira B'Shogeg. But it says in the Sivis, right, in Simon Lama Dalet, that an Aveira B'Shogeg, an Isser D'Rabbanon B'Shogeg is not an Aveira. Because Isserim D'Rabbanon are only Osir, because you're supposed to listen to the rabbis. In other words, the only Isser is to rebel against the rabbis. Rebelling against the rabbis is when, b'mezid, b'miskaven, you say, you rabbis, pow! Right? That's the only time it's usher. But if I, b'shogeg, don't listen to the rabbis, big whoop! The object itself is not, bishul akum, let's say bishul akum, the object itself is not poison. The rabbis have no authority to make it poison. The rabbis say, we want you to listen to us and to not eat Bishul Akum. If you eat Bishul Akum B'shogeg, so what's the big deal? It's not poison. Right? That would be the lumdus of, by the way, this of course should impact on whether Bishul Akum, Asrus, Kalim, etc., where there can be an Isser Chefza. Rabbi Yosef Engel famously develops the idea that maybe there's no such thing as an Isser Chefza by Yisurim Derabbanan, no? See, if you put enough lumdus together, it all makes sense. Maybe.
This isn't necessary, though. I mean, there are also opinions that what the rabbis paskin has metaphysical change of nature. There are also opinions that...
Of course. Okay, so what we are trying to do, I tell this to my students uptown all the time, like, my job is not to say things that are muhrach. My job is to say things that are interesting. Right? In other words, what we are trying to do is to explain the shita, possibly, but it's obviously not airtight, and there are many ways of saying, whoa, 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 hey, Schwartz, you're making five different assumptions, and they might all be wrong. Nachon. Right? I am masking. Each assumption might be wrong. So far, so good?
Great.
So now, if this is the case, so now we can try to plug in the Psik Reisha and Rabbanan's to the famous Hakir of Rebbe Chanan, if you accept all these premises. One, that the nature of an Issa Drabbanan is that you are not listening to the rabbis, you are rebelling against the rabbis. As such, if you do a Bishogeg, if you don't have Kavanah to rebel against the rabbis, so therefore that's not called rebellion. So now we could plug it into Rebbe Chanan's Chakira about the nature of Psik Reisha. Anyone want to do this? Elisha, you look like you're thinking.
Yeah, but not ready to answer.
What?
Not ready to answer yet.
Okay, continue to think. Anyone? Again, it's not muhrach. Nothing here is muhrach. Mindy, you want to take a stab at this?
I can take a stab.
Okay. Try not to kill anybody.
I'm doing my best. I guess if when you do an Isser Derabanan and you don't have the Kavanah to rebel, then like it's not really the nature of an Isser Derabanan. So
and therefore?
If you did if there's a Psik Reisha where you don't have the intention to do that other action, action B, let's say rip out the hair, then it's not really...
not your Kavanah.
Yeah.
And therefore it should be permitted. But if my approach to Psik Reisha is that it's Chada Maisa, meaning that the action of combing the hair is an action of ripping the hair out, so then I don't care about Kavana. It's not about Kavana. It's you are ripping your hair out, Aser, 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 even if it's Drabanan. So effectively, right, to explain the, again, the Egle Tal understands that when Tosfos is meko on Psik Reisha by Bishul Akum, it's because Tosfos is assuming that Psik Reisha by Drabbanans are mutter. And to give that a little bit of flavor, so we just spoke for 20 minutes. Sounds so good? Okay.
No, can we repeat I'm trying to understand again. So, like, the Magen Avraham who says...
The Magen Avraham assumes that Psik Reisha and Rabbanan is Usser.
It's Chadamaisa.
He would be taking the Chadamaisa approach, exactly.
True as a Deshen.
Would be taking the Kavanah approach. And if I take the Kavanah approach and I make an assumption that the only way I violate an Issa Drabbanan is when I have Kavanah to go against the rabbis...
Yeah.
So then, I just defended the Trumas Hadeshen.
Why? Didn't we say that you're having Kavanah?
I only have Kavanah for action A. I don't have Kavanah for action B.
But wait, we said that we're assuming that you have Kavanah for action B as well.
Whoa. We only assume that you're having Kavanah for action B, in most cases, by an Isser Derabbanan, unless we know for sure that you have Kavanah to rebel against the rabbis, we can't ascribe that Kavanah to you. In most cases, we'll say, hey, you had Kavanah for it, good enough. But by Yisurim Derabbanan, ordinary assumptions of Kavanah is not enough. You need full-fledged Kavanah to rebel against the rabbis. That's what the... this is what Rabbi Willig has in his Sefer. I gave you a piece to read. This is like the page before the page I gave you. Hello. It might actually be on the page I photocopied. I don't remember. It might be over. Michal, how are you?
Hi. I'm a little confused. Are we conflating kavanah as in desire for the action to happen with rebelling against the rabbis?
If you didn't have kavanah for the action to happen, how could you then have had kavanah to violate?
Right.
Well, what do you mean? I can, when I brush my hair, have kavanah. I would really like to lose a few strands of hair. So I have kavanah for that to happen, but I'm not rebelling against the rabbis. I just want less hair.
So, yeah.
No, if we're, remember, ripping out hair, we're assuming it's an Issa D'Oraisa. But when it comes to Issurim D'Rabbanan, the only way I can violate an Issa D'Rabbanan is if I'm really rebelling against those rabbis.
It's a really difficult
and
question.
If it's Bishogeg, that's not called rebellion.
Like, even if you're doing a Gomezid, like a lot of people don't have in mind, I'm doing
this because I really want to go against one could argue
in those cases, again, if I would take this position to an extreme, I could argue, oh, so therefore you're not really in violation of the Issa D'Rabbanan. In some ways it's paradoxical that to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan requires a higher level of kavanah. What were you saying, Zoe?
If you don't have enough respect not to do it, then you're being indifferent to what the Rabbanan are saying, then that's just as much rebelling. So being, you know, you want your hair to, some hair loss, but really, and your indifference to the fact that it's an Issa D'Rabbanan is just as much as rebellion. So I think if you're aware of it, because that's not what qualifies a shogeg, you just have to not be aware of it.
If
that, I would understand that, but it's a shogeg, like you had zero intention, you had zero indifference.
If I didn't know that it's usher, for sure I'm not rebelling.
But then
that's the shogeg point. But over here, action A leads to action B all the time.
And you're aware of that, and you know it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, and you don't care.
You don't care because you're daf rebelling against the rabbi. You don't care because you want it to happen. It's different.
Right, you want it to happen.
I want action A.
You not be aware on an Issa D'Rabbanan.
No, I understand everything you're saying, but I'm saying if we're conflating the two kavanas, then there could be a scenario where you're over a D'Rabbanan b'mezid, but you're not rebelling against the rabbis.
Correct. It's entirely possible.
Okay.
We are...
We're building towers in the air.
No?
To play our game where we're building towers on assumptions. Like,
that's what we're trying to do. Okay, so that is point one. Rabbi Willig, I believe, makes this point. I don't think it's in what I printed out for you, but nonetheless, it's still worthwhile. Next. We also suggested another possibility as to why Psik Resha is going to be okay by Bishul Akum, which is based on the assumption, I believe there's a ladies' room only on 6 and on 1.
Okay.
There are so many buildings that only have ladies' rooms on 6 and 1. It doesn't give away anything. This could be like...
Yeah, we could be in pretty
convenient.
Right. Of course,
back to Judaism, yeah.
Yesterday that we gave, though, like with Bishul Akum is like here with us, and then...
Okay, so the other...
That wouldn't work with the second reasoning of like...
So the other approach, that Bishul Akum is only usher because I'm trying to create a relationship, Kirif Hadas, right? So Psik Resha is assumed not to be usher by Bishul Akum, because, hey, I'm trying to do action A. The fact that action B happens, it might be inevitable, but that's not my kavana to do, and therefore there's no kirav hadas.
That's
so this also would only work within approach 2 of Rebbe Chanan's Chakira. It will not work within approach 1. If approach 1 is correct, that it's chodemaisa, so then that also falls away. Absolutely. That was the next point you wanted to make. I think you just said it quicker than I did. Now, or I would have. Now comes along Rabbi Willig. And Rabbi Willig points out in his Sefer that he thinks that this case, when I heat up a stick, and the stick will get hard, but before it gets hard, the stick... has water that cooks out of it, and therefore the stick at first gets soft, then it gets hard. Correct? That's what the Gemara in Shabbos says. Now, Rabbi Willig notes that in his opinion, the stick probably does not first get soft, does not get soft right away. When I put the stick over a fire, it takes a little bit of time before the stick softens, and then a little more time before the stick hardens again. So the opinion that this is based on psik resha would be assuming that psik resha, even if it doesn't happen right away, is still going to be asur. There is a famous Maharal of Prague who says that you're allowed to wash netilas yadayim on the grass on Shabbos against Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says that you can't wash your hands on the grass on Shabbos. Maharal of Prague says on Daf Ayin Gimel that you're allowed to, because, says the Maharal, what's going to happen? The water will come on the grass. If the water comes on the grass will grow. That's the Malach of Zoreya. But it doesn't begin to grow for a while, no? And therefore, says the Maharal, since there's a time delays in Halacha are called Grama, and there's no din of Psik Resha on Grama, and it's all Jim Dandy and amazing. That's what Maharal says. Says Rabbi Willig, one second, the Rishonim here with the stick and the water are assuming that even though it doesn't happen right away, still it's a psik resha that's going to be osur. Right? At least in the Shabbos context. It's a psik resha that's going to be osur. So even though it doesn't happen right away, psik resha can be osur against the Maharal, who assumes that psik resha is only osur when it happens right away. This Maharal is like earth-shaking, no? To say that because there's a time delay, first of all, the Maharal is assuming that the nature of the Malacha of Zoreya is that it will, I am causing growth, no? There's a famous Machlokas between the Minchas Chinuch and the Rashash. At the, right, when you start learning the Malachos, any of you learn Malachos of Shabbos, like Daf Ayin Gimel? So what's Machlokas Minchas Chinuch and Rashash? Sorry. There's a famous Machlokas Minchas Chinuch and Rashash about whether the nature, let's say I put a seed in the ground on Shabbos, and then I take it out of the ground. Was I a Machal Shabbos? Is the Malach of Zoreya only if I cause growth? Or is the Malach of Zoreya putting a seed in the ground? That's Machlokas Minchas Chinuch and Rashash.
Who says what?
Who says what? So this is like a test, right? So the Minchas Chinuch assumes that the Malach of Zoreya is just putting it in the ground, and the Rashash assumes that the Malach is when you cause it to grow later on. This Maharal, right? In other words, and the nafgamina is, let's say someone pulls the seed out of the ground before it begins to grow. And that could happen, by the way, even on Matzah Shabbos, no? Let's say I put a seed in the ground at 7 o'clock Shabbos afternoon. And then Matzah Shabbos, you pull out of the ground. It didn't begin to grow yet. Did you violate the Isser? Or do I say that Lamefrei, I didn't do anything? Right? Maybe I did total muktzah, big whoop. Right? That's not like being Mechal Shabbos. It's bad. Okay, don't do total mux. That's bad. But you understand what I'm saying. Michal, you had a comment?
Yeah, I was going to say, so then how would it work? You would be Michal Shabbos and Afreya? Like,
it turns out that I wasn't Michal Shabbos. Again, this does create issues in terms of like Hasra'a, right? So how can I ever put someone to death for Zoreya? Because you don't know. Maybe they'll pull the seed out of the ground afterwards.
I was also assuming that, like, Zoreya isn't, like, a process, meaning once the seed is in the ground, something is happening even though you can't see it yet. Like, as soon as it's, like,
well, what if
sitting
you take it out
there
immediately?
Right, let's say I put...
Immediately is maybe the difference. But.
Let's say I put in 30 seconds before.
Like farming, and, like, this is where this came from. So
huh?
It just seems like the process of farming and, like, malacha and, you know, things we're trying to avoid. It sounds like just putting this in the ground would be bad because that's the first step in a long process. But it's not worried about like a magical growth and like we're trying to like, what causes me to grow is muksa or like is over on a malacha. It's like I think the beginning step of the process would be.
So you're assuming that the malacha is not to begin the process of growth, and I violated the malacha if I began the process, even if nothing happens. And like, let's say your seed is a dud, right? You still violated Zoreya. But the point is, I think the, you know, the Gemara, this suffix over here comes because by the Gemara in Daf Dalet in Shabbos, speaks about how the malacha of ofe you don't violate until karmu paneha betanor. No? So let's say I put the bread in the oven, right? So the Gemara has a suffix, are you allowed to violate the Issa d'Rabbanon? Should you violate the Issa d'Rabbanon to take the bread out of the oven? No?
Yeah.
Because Rediyas HaPas, it's Chachma, Eina Malacha, whatever it is, it's some sort of Issa d'Rabbanon. So I potentially did a Daraisa. You could save me. You are a good Samaritan. You're going to take the bread out of the oven and mamish save me. That's a great thing. Why? Because the Malacha of Afia is not violated until Karmu Paneha, until the top crust begins to get dark. So do I say the same thing by Zoreya? So that's Machlokas Minchas Chanuch HaMashash. The Maharal, right, and this is a point that Rav Asher Weiss makes in his Sefer on Shabbos, when the Maharal says that you don't violate Zoreya right away, and therefore, the Maharal says, I'm allowed to do a psik resha of Zoreya, because the Isser psik resha is only when the Isser happens right away. The Maharal is obviously assuming, like the Minchas Chinuch, right? That what? Is that the Minchas Chinuch?
That was
Arshash. Is it Arshash? Okay. Now I'm getting confused. But the Maharal is obviously assuming that the nature of the Isser Zoreya is only when it begins to grow. That's the next point. Now, let's go
if
back.
If that's true, then putting the seed in the ground would never be an Isser.
Well, right? It would
because
be. And
we would say that the Isser is like, let's say, watering it at the point where it's about to sprout.
So,
meaning like,
everyone who's involved in the process is doing part of an Isser Da'iraisa. Echad Hevi Esa Eitzim, Echad Hevi Esa Or, they're all in violation of Malachas Shabbos, right? We're all it's a contributing part of the real malacha. The real malacha is growth. Causing growth.
You didn't realize that your seeds were sterile or whatever, or you're just a bad farmer and nothing ever grows, and you're like, oh, God's punishing me for breaking Shabbos. Like, but no, never mind, I never broke Shabbos because it never grew.
It doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
But maybe. Right? Maybe the malacha is causing growth. It's entirely possible. You seem very confused. Or are you having too much fun?
I Danish word. I said it's a little schwer, and then I got excited.
Schwer is like... there's like simple Yiddish, and then there's advanced Yiddish. If you know like a simple Yiddish word, like, I don't know, hackmesser. It's a simple word. Like a knife that like you used to... Whatever, sorry. Okay, so now... The fat.
Are
you sure?
That's
so Rabbi Willig says, first point on this ritva, the ritva over here is saying that on Shabbos it's a psik resha, meaning even though it won't happen until later, still you could be chai for psik resha against the Maharal. Point two. The Ramban, says Rabbi Willig, disagrees with the Ritva, and the Ramban is taking an approach that it's not really a psik resha over here, but you are having kavana to heat the water in the stick. Again, it sounds very similar to Rebbe Chanan stage 2, but Rabbi Willig is saying that the Ramban in Shabbos is arguing that I have kavana to heat the water in the stick. Oh, if this is the case, so then Rabbi Willig says he thinks that there's a nafgamina la halacha between the Ramban and the Ritva regarding fluorescent lights on Shabbos. But again, we have to give a little bit of background.
He shuts down the nafgamina.
What?
He shuts down the fluorescent light one, I think. I thought.
Speak louder.
I thought that he shut down the nafkamina for the fluorescent light because he said the starter is ish
derisa. Whoa! So let's go slowly. A fluorescent light is assumed in Judaism to be usher midrabanan. An incandescent bulb, right? Anything that is heat producing, an incandescent bulb, a halogen bulb, we assume is real ish min haTorah. If it's an LED bulb, these are all LEDs, by the way. We built this building green. And all the, apparently they saved like a few million dollars and they got some green grant from
more.
The city. And that's why there's like no outlets in the base medrash. Have you ever heard a guy complaining about how come there's not enough outlets in the base medrash for laptops? That's because they built the building green to get some a grant. And then the guys were complaining too much. So like 2 years ago, they spent like a month trying to add outlets in the base medrash to draw additional power lines. No? Anyone talking about this?
Yeah.
It's great. It's very exciting.
I did hear about that.
Huh? You did hear about it. I don't make these things up. This is actual real Torah. Huh? So now, apparently, they make laptops better and better, but the one thing that hasn't improved is the battery life on a laptop. Did you ever notice that?
Or phone.
It's whatever. At some point, someone's going to invent a battery that actually works. Maybe one of you. Who knows? Give me a real contribution. Now.
Personally.
So who's the physics major here?
She's computer science. So she's
computer science. Want to invent a battery for us? Okay. The assumption is that fluorescent bulbs and LED bulbs are derabbanan, incandescent bulbs, which are heat-producing, are d'oraisa. Now, the assumption also is that when they have a fluorescent light, the way most fluorescent lights work is that they have something called a starter, which is fluorescent bulbs are a gas that's trapped inside this tube. And in order for the gas to light up, you need a spark that ignites the gas and makes it light up and then shine. But to produce that spark is real fire, you need a flame. That is called the starter. Now, when I turn on a fluorescent bulb, so what am I doing? Am I doing an Issur D'oraisa or an Issur D'rabbanan? On the one hand, it's a psik reisha, perhaps. It's inevitable that in order for the light to go on, I need a spark.
So
do I really have kavanah for the spark? I don't know.
I don't think it's
whoa, that's like too fancy. Malacha shein tzrichah l'gufa, probably not. Because I actually need it, and I want it.
Right, but usually, in psik reisha, right, we're doing action A, and action B happens. And
Malacha shein tzrichah l'gufa, you're doing action B, and action A happens. Again, I'm using Tosis's definition of Malacha shein tzrichah l'gufa because it's simpler, which is Malacha shein tzrichah l'gufa means I'm doing an action for a different reason than it was done in the Mishkan. Rashi's definition of Malacha Shein Tzrichah L'Gufa just complicates matters too much. I think you're oversimplifying. You're thinking that every Malacha Shein Tzrichah L'Gufa is like backwards Psik Reisha.
Basically.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's correct. I think Malacha Shein Tzrichah L'Gufa and Psik Reisha are two different categories. Malacha Shein Tzrichah L'Gufa means I'm doing an action for a reason other than the official reason that's given in the Mishkan. That's the way I'm defining Malacha Shein Tzrichah L'Gufa. The official reason for lighting a fire in the Mishkan is you light a fire because you want the fire. Over here, I want the fire. I want that spark. I want the spark because the spark does something. It ignites a gas.
By flicking the switch, aren't you causing the starter to start?
So when I flick a switch, I'm causing the starter. But if you ask a normal person, okay, I'm giving myself an out. If you ask a normal person, what are you doing when you're turning on, when you flick that switch? They're going to say, I'm turning on a light. Does any normal person think, I am igniting a starter that's going to create a spark that's going to... What?
What's your action doing?
My kavana is this room is dark. I want the room to get light. So now I push this button. Vayihi'ar. Right, there's a delay actually. Right? I push the button vayihi'ar. Why? Because I pushed the button. I wanted the light to come on and it goes on. I think these are LEDs,
action.
So it doesn't matter.
I mean, it's a funny, for secrets before, we're like, I wanted to drag the bench and know that it's also going to create holes in the ground.
Right, I think you're asking Tehillah's question. Tehillah's question is, Over here, the B is happening before the A.
And yeah,
right, but I'm assuming that A is what I want. If you ask me, what am I doing? I am dragging a bench. What am I doing? I am turning on the lights. There is an inevitable result that by dragging the bench, I'm making a hole. Inevitable result by turning on the lights, turning on the fluorescent lights, I'm making a spark. So that could be psychratia. That is what the Ritva would say. The Ramban would say that, no, it's not really psychratia. You have kavana to make those sparks. Right? That's what the Ramban would be saying. Again, similar to Rabbi Chanan B, similar to... Oh. Now, a nafgamina between the Ritva and the Ramban is, can a guy turn on a fluorescent light for you on Shabbos? The Mishnah Berurah paskins that al yedei nachri psik reisha is mutter. No? I can ask a guy to do a psik reisha haint biz margen from today until tomorrow. Haint biz margen. Got that?
Yeah.
I can ask...
I
can ask a guy. I can ask a guy to turn on the light for me from today until tomorrow. That's because it's a psikresha. But that's only a psikresha according to the Ritva's definition. According to Ramban's definition, it's not a psikresha. This is Rabbi Willig's essay that I gave you to read. Rabbi Willig writes it in a very dense sort of way. You really have to spend time on reading what he writes. Yeah.
I thought he said for the Ramban that, like a
psikresha,
I mean, through the
nachar,
it would be okay.
If, according to the Ramban or according to Ritva?
I think the Ramban.
No, I
thought he said, here, I have it here. I thought he says, here on page Kuf Ayin Hey, which paragraph are you reading me?
The third.
Aval haritva kosav, sha'af levasho miskaven. Oh, I said the Ramban and Ritva backwards? You read the third paragraph, the paragraph begins, Avo?
No, that's like that. It starts with the next one.
V'nafgamino l'dina b'in haramban r'itva, mutva aydei nachri, l'fi ha-mishna b'rish, shemata psikresh aydei nachri, v'u alay nafgamino lo'ar fluorescent, v'etzema ar eno esh, v'yishon d'shvus d'shvusu, mutar l'mitzva, avo, ein or ze yachol lo'ha'ir, ela aydei starter, shikanire yish bo'ktsas esh, hu d'araisa, l'chein l'fi ha-ramban, so I said it backwards, that the Ramban is assuming it's psikresha, and the Ritva is saying that l'dover zan miskaven, correct? That's what Rabbi Willig has. Yeah, that's why I said it backwards. I'll tell you why I said it backwards. I said it backwards because I am influenced by a Ritva in Avodah Zarah. No? Because the Ritva in Avodah Zarah, which is actually what we're learning over here, the Ritva writes that this case is psikresha, no?
Is there a steer in the Ritva?
I don't think it's a steer. I think Rabbi Willig was trying to find something that didn't really exist. I don't think it's a real stira. And this, I think Rabbi Willig was reading too much into that Ritva and Shabbos. Here. Because he says, I'm sure you're going to get me from coming in. I'm going to be confused. I'm going to be confused. I'm going to be confused. V'hachi perusho, mal detema de b'shulei mana choshev ikir hakavana, kamash malan de l'shrurei mana is ikir hakavana, v'chein perusho b'taisus, v'chein perush rabbeinu haramban. Notice the Ritva over here is saying that I'm saying the same thing as the Ramban. He doesn't use the words psikresha here. I acknowledge that. But the Ritva over here is saying, I'm saying the same thing as my Rebbe, the Ramban, which means that the Ritva is telling me there's no difference between what he says and what the Ramban says. That's... This was my little coda to Rabbi Willig's essay. So, Bekitzer HaMa'aseh, what I was trying to get at is as follows, that if I want to talk about Psik Reisha by Bishul Nachrim, that Psik Reisha is going to be Mutter, What I'm really saying is that this case is a psik resha, and therefore, by fluorescent bulbs, it should be mutter al yedei goyim, because presumably, this case is very similar to the fluorescent bulbs. By the way, tehila, this case of the stick is also where what we would call B happens before A. I'm trying to harden the stick. In order to get there, the water has to cook out. Right? So the B happens before the A, as opposed to dragging the bench where the A and the B, right?
Well, meaning, what is that? One's causing, like, in the case of heating a stick, you're heating a stick. You're heating a stick and the water's evaporating.
Right.
But the act is the heating of the stick. So that I can understand more of a psik resha than lighting of, like, flicking the light, but you're sparking.
You're saying that flicking the light...
You're just
I mean, my assumption is that we judge things based on how a normal person would assess the situation. The standard assessment of the situation is I'm turning on the light. You happen to know, because you're a physicist, that there's a starter. And therefore there's a spark that takes place. But that, I would assume, is the B, is the inevitable result. But it's not your primary kavana. By Shabbos, I focus on the inevitable result also. By Bishul Akam, I only focus on your primary kavanah for one of two reasons. That's what we're trying to develop. Okay, do we have 5 minutes to try to do another Gemara, or should we take a break?
We have five minutes.
Okay, 5 minutes, let's go. Zuck the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. It is 4 lines into the wide lines. Hineach Yisoh Basar Gabi Gecholam U'ba'u V'kochem V'hofach Bo Mutter. If a Jew puts meat on the coals and the goy comes and turns it over, it's mutter. So you might ask, what's the case? If the pshad is that it would have cooked without the goy's action, so of course it's mutter. Elalav, di ilohafach, lohavabashal, amai mutter, bishul akum ninhu. If the pshat is that had the guy not turned the meat over, it would not have cooked. The Jew put meat on the coals, but the Jew put the meat on the coals in such a shvach, to use a Yiddish word, such a shvacher place of the coals, that it won't cook. So of course, when the guy turns it over, the guy is doing the cooking. Lo tzricha, di ilohafach, havabashal, betar tishai. The hashta kabasho b'chadashata mal detema kruve b'shulam milsehi kamash malan. Zuck the Gemara. The case is that had the Jew left it there, it would have cooked in 2 hours. Now that the guy turned it over, so the guy moved it to a better part of the fire, so it's going to cook in 1 hour. I would have thought that the guy is doing a significant act, that kruve b'shule milsehi kamash malan, that kruve b'shule is not milsa. Now, the Gemara in Shavuos tells us on Daf Yud Zayin that Kruve Bishol is Milsa. The Gemara speaks about a case that a Zar does Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash without actually entering the Beis HaMikdash. The case is that there's like some meat on the Mizbeach and the non-Kayin goes and like flips the meat. So the Gemara says that that's only Kruve Bishule, but Kruve Bishule is Milsa, right? And it's a significant Avoda that the non-Kohen violates. There can be an Isser of Avoda B'Mikdash without actually going into the Beis HaMikdash if you have a long enough stick. No? Don't try this. It's bad. Okay, but that's the Gemara. So apparently this Gemara is also a further Kula by Bishul Akum, that by Bishul Akum we assume Kruve Bishul is insignificant, although it is significant in other dinim. That's what this Gemara says. So then the Gemara asks, V'amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Koshu Kamacho Ben Drusoy, Ein Bo Mishum Bishul Akum, Ha'eno Kamacho Ben Drusoy, Yesh Bo Mishum Bishul Akum. The Gemara asks, but 1 second, if the food is not Macho Ben Drusoy, there is Bishul Akum. So here also, so what if the Jew put the meat on the fire? If the meat did not get, how much is Macho Ben Drusai? Who remembers in Hilchos Shabbos? A third or a half cooked. In Hilchos Shabbos, we're generally Machmir for a half. By Bishul Akum, the poskim say you could be Makel for a third. the fruit is a third cooked, so then there's no bishul akum. So here also, frek the Gemara over here, if the food is not a third cooked by what the Jew did, it should be bishul akum. So the Gemara answers, hasam kigon de osve besulta v'shakle over kochum v'osar b'tanura. The case where it would be usher is when the food is put in a basket. You see, if the Jew leaves the food on the fire, even though it's not bishul to the point of machol ben drusayet, it's still going to be mutter. Because the food remains on the coals the whole time. The only time when we say that if it's not kemachol ben drusayet, it's going to be usher, is when the food was on the fire, taken off, it goes into a basket, and then if the guy puts it back on, and it was not yet machol ben drusayet, then it's going to be usher. That's what the Gemara says. So far, so good? So, obviously, we'll have to talk about this in greater detail, but I see a teeny bit of impatience, so I'll just make one point from this Gemara, and then we'll break. Teeny bit of impatience. The Gemara speaks about meat. Is meat nechal kamo shulchai? Can you eat raw meat?
No.
Yes.
No. Hard.
Hard. Actually, you could, yeah.
Beef jerky!
What do they do to it?
I think it's just cured. I don't think it's actually cooked.
I'm not sure about that.
You definitely can't eat raw chicken.
You can't eat raw chicken. So the Gemara says that there is something by raw meat called that chazir umtsa, that you could just eat small pieces of raw meat, and therefore in Hilchos Shabbos we pass in that raw meat is not muktza. Because it's edible. Totally gross. But edible.
Are raw potatoes muktza?
Yes.
No. You're like,
thank goodness that I know.
Raw potato, any food that's totally inedible is muktza. Raw meat is edible. So the Bir Hagra asks Akasha, how come in this Gemara I talk about bishul akum on meat? Don't we know that meat is edible when it's raw? Anything that's nechal kemoshu hu chai, there's no bishul akum. So the Gra answers, based on the category that we know already, it's really nechal, ayde hatchak. It don't taste good. But there are two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, says the Gra. There's a raya from this Gemara that nechal ayde hatchak is not considered nechal kamo shulchai. Remember, the Gra isn't a primary source. This Gra is Os Lamed Gimel in Simen Kuf Yud Gimel. The Gra, who's into primary sources, I have a beferish Gemara, that necha ayidei hadchak doesn't help, because meat should be necha ayidei hadchak. Okay, ladies, you should have a wonderful Yom Ha'atzma'ut, Ma'adim L'simcha L'Gula Shleima. There's a tefillah chagigit in my show beginning in around 20 minutes. There's a tefillah chagigit over here. Have fun.